This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Sidewalks, bike lanes, side paths, they've all been given short shrift in Illinois' transportation budgets. But a new law is about to change all of that. The state will now be required to fully fund the cost of walking and biking infrastructure on state roads. That's a big difference from the 20% for which it's been responsible in the past. For older adults, people with disabilities, even children, advocates say this is a critical move in the fight for more equitable, safe, and sustainable streets. In the past, the financial burden was shifted onto communities, which was often too much to bear, especially for lower-income areas. Residents needing bike lanes and sidewalks wouldn't even attempt to propose the idea to the powers that be because they knew there wouldn't be money to cover the costs. And if they could, the proposed infrastructures would often be cut from final plans. To talk more about this, we're joined now by Lindsay Braun. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Lindsay, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Cynthia Hoyle. She's on the board of Ride Illinois and is also vice president of CU Safe Routes, which seeks to educate people on pedestrian and bike safety issues. Cynthia, thank you for being here as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join the conversation as ever. 800-222-9455 is the number. We want to know, what is your everyday commute like? Are your streets and sidewalks safe to bike to work? What about walking the kids to school? Our lines are open, 800-222-9455. We can also take any questions for our guest. The number again, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Cynthia, I'm going to begin with you. I know Ride Illinois, a group you're on the board of, has worked to fight for this law. It's been a long time coming. What exactly, how does this law apply? Can you walk us through the process of getting this enacted?
Sure. Well, Illinois passed a law, a complete streets law in 2007, which required that all state roads be built with infrastructure for all roadway users. And this is to do a final implementation of that because IDOT had a policy of requiring 20% match for sidewalks and bike lanes and other kinds of infrastructure, whereas they covered 100% of the cost of building the roadway for cars. And we know, 30% or more of our population is not able to drive. And so that left a lot of people without the infrastructure in communities that are smaller that couldn't afford that 20% match, which could be a significant amount of money. So the Active Transportation Alliance, Ride Illinois, and the Metropolitan Planning Council all worked to get a bill passed, and it took effect August 30th of this year. And the bill currently applies to towns with 1,000 or more residents, but they're continuing to work to push for it to cover all municipalities, regardless of size. And so there were two main sponsors, Representative Moeller of Elgin and Senator Belt of East St. Louis, who worked on this. There were a lot of other legislators and other folks involved. And a call went out to the community of bicyclists and pedestrian advocates around the state, and 1,000 witness slips were submitted by those folks by the time it got to the Senate. And one of our board members, in fact, George Farrow, who's an alderman in Lebanon in Southern Illinois, testified about how that local match kept a community like his from being able to apply for and implement grants to fix dangerous overpasses, for example, when the state comes in and fixes an overpass to make it better and safer. They now would be able to do this if their communities of 1,000 or more. So it's to make the transportation system work for everybody, not just people who can afford to have their own private vehicle.
Sure, sure. Lindsay, let me ask you about some of the historical reasons for this, maybe, right? The Illinois Department of Transportation has always covered the full cost of work on travel lanes used by drivers and other motor vehicles. Why was the cost of sidewalks, bike lanes, and all that sidelined for so long?
Well, as with so many things in life, how we spend our money reflects our priorities. And for about a century now, we've strongly prioritized the automobile and our planning and our engineering, and especially as we're talking about today, and our funding. And prioritizing automobiles has been expensive. Roads aren't cheap to build. They're not cheap to maintain, but we've come to expect them. We've come to expect large-scale investments for cars. But on the other hand, pedestrian bicycle funding at the federal level represents only 2% at its height of transportation spending. So we've had significant underinvestment in pedestrian bicycle needs across the country and here in Illinois. And even projects that do come up are controversial because they're not what we're accustomed to, even though they're often cheaper, they can do great things for our communities. And I think it's important to note too that a lot of communities do prioritize pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure. I've been doing some research with colleagues on suburban communities in northeastern Illinois and what barriers they face in implementing pedestrian infrastructure near transit stops. And we found through this, in talking with practitioners in the area and in 10 other similar regions across the US, that leaders and community members often prioritize and increasingly prioritize pedestrian and bicycle access, but there's a gap in implementation and actually doing it. And that gap often comes down to funding. And so, this law change is going to be important in helping translate our priorities into our spending. And just a second minor point, I think in addition to priorities, it comes down to how we talk about pedestrian and bicycle projects. We often talk about these as alternative modes of transportation, even though they were around long before the automobile. But this language comes up in our federal legislation. We tend to call pedestrian and bicycle projects alternative investments, enhancements to roadway projects. Here in Illinois, our major source of funding for pedestrian and bicycle projects and other needs is the Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program. And that word enhancement implies that it's an add-on. It's something that is about the aesthetic, the environmental, the cultural nature of our roads, rather than seeing these as integral to the transportation system. We often frame them as add-ons, as things that aren't necessary. So, you might think these are just small words, but words matter, and how we talk about infrastructure matters for our community's expectations.
No, that's a great point. And I have a friend who covers transportation issues nationally, and we could have an entire show dedicated to the sort of just the phraseology of a lot of journalism and public policy planning and transportation, and how that sort of slants our thinking towards automobiles as opposed to other modes of transport. But Cynthia, we need to take a break in about a minute here. But before we do, can you just talk briefly about how a lack of access to these sort of safe paths hurt vulnerable populations, right? Particularly older adults, people with disabilities.
Well, we know that people in poor communities and neighborhoods and the elderly make up a disproportionate number of the people who are hit and killed by motorized vehicles. And this also highlights the issue of minority neighborhoods, which have often had underinvestment in infrastructure. And so when people are trying to get to work, they're trying to get to school, they're trying to get to the grocery store, and just by the simple act of trying to cross the street after they get off of the bus, for example, they are hit and killed by a car. It really highlights how unfair the funding of our transportation system has been, that because you couldn't afford a personal vehicle, you were placed in danger because the infrastructure wasn't there to give you safe passage home.
All right, we need to take a break here. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about a new law in Illinois that is expected to improve the odds of local communities and the state, I should say, investing in sidewalks, bike paths, side paths, other infrastructure, basically things that are not roads designed for vehicles like cars and trucks, things that are designed for people in wheelchairs, people on bicycles, scooters, that sort of thing. We're speaking with Cynthia Hoyle, who's on the board of Ride Illinois, and also with Lindsay Braun. She's assistant professor in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. More to come in just a moment. This is the 21st. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st comes from Christie Clinic. Christie Clinic, providing healthcare to the community for more than 90 years. Local procedures, providers, specialties, and choice. Christie Clinic is focused on caring for the community.
You're listening to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about a new state law that is going to require the state of Illinois, state government, to fund the cost of sidewalks, side paths, bike lanes, that sort of thing. In the past, communities had to provide the lion's share of the funding for those sorts of projects, and that was often an impediment, especially in smaller towns with smaller budgets, or in communities that just didn't have the money to be able to invest in that, to make that sort of upfront investment to get a small state match. Now the state is going to be fully responsible for that. We're speaking with Lindsay Braun, who's professor in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and also Cynthia Hoyle on the board of Ride Illinois. She's also vice president of CU Safe Routes, which seeks to educate people on pedestrian and bike safety issues. We'd love to hear from you, listeners, about how are sidewalks, bike lane, how is the infrastructure for people and people-powered vehicles in your area? 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455 is the number. Let's talk now about how this story interacts with climate change. Lindsay, we've had record temperatures here in Illinois this summer. It's clear climate concerns are not going away anytime soon. What could a change like this mean for our environment, specifically Illinois' climate?
Well, you know, we know transportation is a huge contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. Here in the U.S., transportation tailpipe emissions, so not even accounting for the manufacturing and disposal of vehicles, accounts for almost a third of total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions and 5% of total global greenhouse gas emissions, just ours in the U.S. And this has been growing steadily over time, faster than other sectors. And so a shift towards walking and cycling as modes that do not emit greenhouse gases could really help here. And there's a big opportunity. About half of all vehicle trips in the U.S. are 3 miles or less at, you know, a distance that we would consider to be fairly bikeable. 21% of those are a mile or less, which we might say could be very walkable. And, you know, you might think that, well, this is a lot of short trips taken by car, but they're not very long, so that could be okay environmentally. But even short car trips are problematic because a big chunk of their total emissions come just from the act of starting your car. And most people aren't taking short trips by car just because they want to or because they don't like to walk or cycle. It's usually a rational choice based on the infrastructure conditions they face. Just anecdotally, I'm fortunate to live here in Champaign where everything's pretty close together. If you've driven 15 minutes away, you're probably in a cornfield. But still, I bike my daughter to preschool every day, and I always have parents come up to me and saying, you know, that they wish they could do the same. And it's not because they live far away. People in Champaign don't live far away, but because it doesn't feel safe, because they don't have the infrastructure to support that form of travel for them. So by improving our pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure, we could shift a lot of our, you know, short bikeable trips to environmentally friendly modes. And this can also help with transit as well. that research I mentioned before was really geared around looking at pedestrian access to transit. And in transit, we have this problem called first and last mile connectivity. There are plenty of people out there who would like to take transit, but the stop is just a little bit too far away from their home or a little bit too far away from their workplace. And if they had good infrastructure to kind of close that gap and to get to the bus stop, that could increase transit ridership as well, which could be an important factor in reducing emissions.
Yeah. You know, we heard from some of our listeners, and Cynthia, I'd like to read some of the text messages we got that are sort of on the points that we just heard Lindsay talking about there. One person, we asked, I should say, our texting group about this topic, and somebody wrote us, some Jacksonville streets, Jacksonville, Illinois, are wide enough or less traveled and relatively safe, but many are too narrow to support a parking lane and a bike lane. Another listener, Matthew in Northern Illinois, texted, I would definitely support more sidewalks and bike lanes. I personally live in a rural town of about 1,500 people in Northern Illinois, and a fair amount of people like to walk or ride their bikes down to the village square or the Dollar General that was recently built. Currently, there is no sidewalk or bike lane along the side of Highway 70 entering Durand. The village is talking about doing something, but if state funding could be used, that would help a lot. I think if towns had a more robust bike path system, more people would definitely use it to commute. Thank you to everyone who wrote in to us. Cynthia, from a practical standpoint, how do we know where to designate these spaces, right? How does how do you build a robust bike path system like Matthew was talking about?
Sure, I can answer that. I just wanted to make one quick clarification. The state was requiring communities to offer 20% of the local match, and so the amount that was dependent on the cost of the overall project. It wasn't a majority of the funding. Nevertheless, it was a huge impediment.
Sure, and thank you for clarifying that, yeah.
Sure. There are several ways that we can prioritize the best locations. Of course, one is to ask the public where they would like to go. But when, as a bicycle planner, when I've worked on bike plans and communities, what we have looked at are destinations. Where are the places people need to go? Where are the most trips go to? The grocery stores, the schools, the hospitals, the other things like large employers, and are there facilities that allow people to get there? So there's a process of looking at destinations and what kind of infrastructure is there, and looking at whether or not you can put it in. And so lots of times there are gaps. So there will be segments of sidewalks or bicycle infrastructure, but there's a gap that makes it impossible for people to make those connections. And so filling those gaps is also another way that you can quickly help create a system that gives people an opportunity to get where they need to go. And crossing roads is really critically important, because we know that intersections are a location where a majority of these crashes occur. So we have to have safe crossings for people as well. And when I've worked with communities on safe routes to school plans, that's one of the things that parents mention a lot, is that the kids can't safely cross the street. And I don't know about you, but I was able to walk and bike to school when I was a kid. And it's in your previous segment, they were talking about the kids who can't get to school because they don't have school bus drivers. And in the community they live in, they may not have the infrastructure for their children to be able to walk or bike. And giving parents money to drive their kids to school when they may be doing shift work or two or three jobs when they can't drive their kids to school is not going to solve the problem. But fixing the infrastructure might give people more options for being able to get where they need to go.
Yeah, no, definitely. I biked to school, but it was only three blocks and I was not crossing any major intersections for that. Lindsay, let me ask you about, do we know about safety? So we're talking about, do you repurpose existing infrastructure, right? I'm familiar with Second Street, which is in Springfield next to the Capitol building where I used to work. That used to be four lanes in both, or two lanes north, two lanes south. And a number of years ago, the city of Springfield made it two lanes for cars and trucks, and then bike lanes on the side. Is there, how do you prioritize that? And is there a safety difference between that versus, you know, sort of designating a separate bike path on the side of the road that's set off, right? Like I'm thinking I would feel safe biking on Second Street, as I mentioned, it described it being transformed. I would not necessarily want my children biking on it. Whereas if there was a separate bike path, I might feel differently about that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the safety benefits of fully separated infrastructure are undeniable. It combines the safety appeal of trails with the connectivity and kind of transportation viability of bike lanes. And so I think you're right. And most people would feel the same, that, you know, they might be okay potentially using bike lanes on the street, but if it's, you know, if they're really safety conscious, or if they're biking with their kids, they really want that protected infrastructure. And there has been a move toward building more protected bike lanes, because that's really what's going to get people out and cycling. I feel the same way. I really only like biking with my daughter on separated infrastructure, really low traffic residential streets. But the transformation that you talked about before, that 4-lane to 2-lane conversion, is also becoming more prominent. It's called a road diet, although some like to call it a road buffet for a better connotation, that you have lots of options of ways to travel. But those have been shown to have safety benefits as well. Maybe not quite on par with protected bike lanes, but they do reduce vehicle travel speeds because you only have one lane in each direction. They do set aside that separated space for cyclists. And there are before and after studies showing that they have crash reduction potential, safety improvements, and a lot of other good benefits for communities.
Cynthia, I wonder if there's anything else that communities can do to make biking safer. What is America and our way of thinking about this in general getting wrong in this topic?
Well, I think having good public education campaigns and doing that continually is really helpful. There are still drivers out there who do not understand that bicyclists have a right to use the road just like drivers do, that the road wasn't built just for cars. And so having that message be an ongoing one in the community, having public information campaigns, having your elected officials participate in public events like Walk and Roll to School Day, which is coming up October 6th, and having people think about how they can get from point A to point B. That's another problem that I found with people, is that when they first start trying to ride a bike somewhere, they take the route that they drove, and that may not be a very good route, and it might frighten them, and then they'll decide that they don't want to take that route anymore. So helping people identify routes, making sure that the message is out there that people have a right to use the road. I think a lot of drivers also don't realize they are supposed to stop for a pedestrian in a crosswalk. We are not supposed to stand on the side of the road until there are no cars coming if you're at an unsignalized intersection, and wait for it to be clear to cross the road. But a lot of drivers do have those expectations. So I think we need more public education. We need more public demonstration of how people can get around, and to also help people identify the best ways to do that. And those are all things that we can be doing. In addition to, I really strongly believe we should be providing bicycle safety education in our schools for every child in the state. We teach them to play football and baseball and basketball and all these other sports, when those are things that we cannot do as we get older because our knees and other things don't hold up. But bicycling is something you can do throughout your life, because even when you get into being much older, you can switch over to a trike, and now there are electric assist bikes. So bicycling is really a lifelong option, and if we give people those options and a safe place to use them, they will use them.
Lindsay, final question, I think, to you. I wonder if, you know, if this bike share programs, right? Do you see this law playing into that, possibly expanding in Illinois? I mean, we've seen it in Chicago, certainly, Champaign-Urbana. I understand there was a number of pranks last year as undergrads would find interesting places to leave the bikes that were left around campus. But other cities have struggled to implement these sort of sharing programs. Do you see that coming online more as a result of some of these changes?
Yes, I see it as possible. There's certainly room for it. You know, bike share programs aren't going to be feasible everywhere, but a lot of the places where they're seen as infeasible now because of low demand are really just places where cycling isn't safe. You know, you can look at the infrastructure in a lot of these places that are struggling to implement bike share programs. And of course, people aren't cycling there. It's a rational choice to not expose yourself to that risk. And so if we have better infrastructure alongside or really before investment in a bike share program, that's going to maximize the potential for it to work and for it to be safe and convenient for the communities that it serves.
Well, Lindsay Braun and Cynthia Hoyle, thank you so much for being with us today here on the 21st.
You're welcome.
Yes, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us and for talking about this.
Absolutely. Lindsay Braun is assistant professor in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Cynthia Hoyle is vice president of CU Safe Routes and on the board of Ride Illinois. And that is all the time for our show today. Want to make one other call out. We'd love to hear your memories of where you were on 9/11 when you first heard the news. We're going to be doing a remembrance show later this week. It's been 20 years. Where were you when you first heard it? You can leave us a voicemail. The number is 217-300-2121. You can find that and other ways to contact us at our website, which is 21stshow.org, 21stshow.org. 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.